Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
The last one, it did not like me.
No.
Then I had a gnat. Oh. You can tell I edited it yesterday.
I'm beginning to wonder if your core don't have a short or something.
Maybe. I'll check the tightness at the other side, too.
I'll check to see how tight it is, Kim. Probably loose.
Spit on that thing.
You're ridiculous.
In the episode, could you hear like feedback or anything?
I can't recall.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't hear any feedback. No, I did cut out a couple pieces where you couldn't hear him at all.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, you just see my mouth move.
I'm like, that's not good.
We should do that to Kim's mic.
Well, I can always go back and dub it, but I'll put something completely off the wall. <in it. laughs>
Make it to where Kim agrees to whatever it is.
You're right, Shane.
Make it like
you
one
are
of those.
The smartest and prettiest.
Yeah, right. Make it like a Godzilla. Make it like a Godzilla movie.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Hello. How are you? What's that smell? It's me. My favorite is when they would like move their mouth for 1 second, but they would have a paragraph.
Yeah, a mile long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kim and I stopped at Subway. For lunch?
I'm shocked.
I know.
Well, stunned.
I knew that it was her favorite place, so I wanted to
She just loves shoving her mouth full of those footlongs.
She did.
Why do you want to be kind to me this week? I mean, you've never done that before in your life.
She insisted that we ate there.
Oh, of course.
And then she just shoved the entire thing in her mouth.
That is a flat out
Do you know why Kim eats there? Why? I think I know why. Because it's a safe place. Because, you know, whatever you get there, you're not going to be running to the bathroom.
You were saying safe place, and I thought you were going to tell us that now people
you can
drop
leave your
off
babies there.
Yeah. And I was like, you heard of Jared. I wouldn't be leaving my child.
That's still one of my favorite things. Like, come on, let's go down to the fire station. What's the age limit?
I know. Anytime I walk into our old building, every time I see that big window, I just remember Josh being there and that child screaming through the hall. And Josh just without even, like, without even moving or putting any expression into it, he goes, all right, let's go on down to the fire station.
I must have not been there.
No, you weren't. It was just Josh and I.
That's
we were just,
how
like,
quick
doing
as soon as I heard a screaming child, fire station is my first thought.
I remember I laughed. I was laughing so much I almost fell in my seat just because he was so nonchalant about it.
That's funny.
I think the child yelled to his mom, Mom, where are we going next? And you're like, to the fire station.
To the fire station, honey.
That poor baby.
You got to get him excited, too.
Oh, yeah, so excited.
You're going to love it there. Kim loves the fire station.
But, I mean, we grew up with the mom who made us all excited to go to Wally World.
Oh, that's true.
And then we get to, we're thinking amusement park, Kings Island, Dollywood. Mm-hmm. We get to Walmart parking lot. And we're like, oh, are we getting supplies?
I was watching, what's that? We were talking about in the car, Kim, the Sheldon series.
Oh, Little Sheldon.
Little Sheldon.
Yeah. So I started watching it. Because I've been home for several days now.
It's cute. And, I like it.
Oh, it's so good. I like it. But I thought of our mom because the grandma was watching the kids. And it was, I don't know, I'm thinking it's like 8 o'clock, you know. And she comes out. She goes, all the kids are asleep. And the mom goes, it's only 8. How in the hell did you get them to go to sleep? And she goes, cough syrup.
Cough syrup?
And she's like, you drugged my children. She goes, well, it's quiet, isn't it?
You're welcome.
Our mom used to give us some cough syrup because we would stay up so late on Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'd wake up at like 4. We didn't have a clock in our room. So we had, we didn't know what time it was.
Mm-hmm. It was still dark. Then it was too early.
We'd go out because she would always have to do the stockings like as soon as we fell asleep because we would always wake up way early and right. we'd keep going in there and bothering her. Like every, you know, you go back, you think, did I fall asleep? Has it been an hour yet? No, it's been 10 minutes. Mom, mm-hmm. can we open?
I remember one Christmas is when we lived, I think, in Summitville. And Josh and I got up and snuck out to the living room. And Josh saw that little Barbie.
Yeah, it was like thing. The little RV had like.
Oh, like little camper mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
And he comes back to the room and he's like.
So excited. There's
a Barbie. I don't remember what it was called.
See, but it's one of those people that think we decide this. Mm-hmm. No, I was born this mm-hmm. way. Yeah,
you would have probably been in.
Kindergarten.
Kindergarten, yeah.
Because that's the first grade. Class. Yeah. I don't remember her real name.
I was going to say Miss Honey. That's
the, from Matilda.
Matilda.
I don't remember her real name. All I remember was I was 5 or 6 and I had seen black people before. We grew up in rural Indiana and it was before Robrina, my best friend in elementary school.
Your first girlfriend?
Yeah. It was just a kiss. But I remember I was so excited because my teacher was so beautiful. She was like one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. And
was she black?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And she was black and I was just enamored by her. Mm-hmm. Like just gorgeous. And of course, little
always
little gay kindergartner. I'm like, oh, she's pretty. I'm obsessed.
Always tan.
And I came home. God. Or when mom picked me up, I was like, Mom, my teacher is pretty and she's chocolate. Mm-hmm. So innocent.
So kindergarten. I may have talked about this already on the podcast, but I remember it was when Kim and I worked in hell. There was a black girl who worked next to me one day and we became good friends. And it's actually before I went onto your team, Kim. It was before I actually knew Kim or before then. You know, we would just come in every day and she always had this beautiful, long, curly hair.
Wig.
And I didn't know that. And the next day she comes in and her hair was all short and she had like this little thing on it. And I knew dang well, like her hair so thick and long, that she couldn't
you
fit
cut
that.
Cut your hair.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened to your hair?
Bless his
She's
heart.
Like, I'm telling you what, I woke up late today and I was supposed to go get it in or I don't know, whatever, at the hair salon or whatever.
She put on her errands wig.
Evidently. And I was just like, she just like said this, like I knew, but I didn't. Cause like Josh said, we grew up in rural Indiana and I never was friends with any black people.
And he was straight. So
yeah, I think there was only one black person in our school and they were not in my grade. So I don't remember ever talking to them.
She was my friend, Robert.
That's right. 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 Only his friend, as he says. But I just remember like being so dumbfounded that her hair wasn't what she always wore. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I actually like realized that a lot of black people have to go throughout this whole process. I mean, women, of course, have the problem. Gay guys have the problem, too, that you just have to like put on the beautification that society thinks that you should have. Mm-hmm. But I just remember in that moment her telling me how long it took for her to do her wig. And I just thought, oh my gosh, and I'm over here complaining because I have to take a shower and it takes 10 minutes.
Oh yeah.
You know?
It takes hours.
Yeah.
I like to do it though. I'm not, you know, incredibly experienced with it, but I've done braids before and sew-ins and glue-ins mm-hmm. and roller sets on, you know, aunties. And oh, I loved it. My beauty school, the teaching of ethnic hair was... here's the chapter, read it, but no, like, hands-on. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky enough to have a woman who had been doing it for years. She was in her 40s, and she had just been doing it from her home, and she wanted to, you know, come and actually be licensed to do it in a salon.
Sure.
And she would have so many clients come in because, you know, been doing it for years. Mm-hmm. Once you find a good person that can, do your hair good, you don't
go to anybody
them.
Else now.
So she would have a lot of people, and sometimes she'd get, you know, over and, hey, take this client. It's real easy. I'll show you how. And I came about it that way.
You know, you were talking about how, you know, sweet you were when you were young and your teacher was of color. I have no doubt in my mind that racism is a learned.
Oh, yeah.
A learned behavior.
100%.
When my nephew was, he was in kindergarten, he was 5. He lived with us at the time. And my ex-husband's sister was pregnant, and her husband was Haitian. And we were on our way to school one day, and he says, "Aunt Kim, when Aunt Linda's baby's born, if it's a boy, will he be black? And if she's a girl, will she be white?" I said, "Well,
that's ask your mommy."
Right.
I'm like, "Well, that's not really how that works, but that's great philosophy for a 5-year-old, you know?" Right. And if everybody in this world could go back to that innocent 5-year-old mindset, this world would be so much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
I've never really lost that when dealing with other people. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful that our parents themselves did not teach us mm-hmm. to hate anybody based on, you know, who they are or their appearance, mm-hmm. unless they're an orange, crusty little vice president.
Right. If you don't wash your hands, you can go
right,
die.
Right. A little crusty. They didn't say nothing about no crusty. No crusty musties.
No.
But I remember, you know, we would have uncles who would say stuff as we became older around mm-hmm. us, and like, you're ignorant. Like, yeah. mm-hmm. I never remember thinking like, "Oh, he's onto something here."
Right.
Like, what a buffoon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember the very first time I realized racism was Josh and I were in a relative's vehicle. We were really young, so he probably doesn't remember it, but we were driving in a neighborhood. I can't remember if it was Anderson or in Muncie, but there was a little black child playing out in front of the yard. And I remember looking over and think, "Oh, he's having fun, you know?" And the person who we were with was like, "Look at that N-word." And we're just driving by. And I just remember like thinking, "Oh my gosh," like that. But that was the first time I'd ever heard of that word too.
Right.
So I remember having to like figure out on my own what it was. I mean, now kids can just get on the computer and Google.
Oh,
it,
yeah.
You know,
it's probably the same uncle who anytime we drive past anybody that looked homosexual, but mm-hmm. look at that queer F word.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I don't understand. I mean, I was always told, you know, treat others like you expect them to treat you. And the hate has no place in the world.
Now, when we get to Unmasked today, I will talk more about what happened to me this week, but I wanted just to
that
show
sounds
you
so bad.
I'll give you their name. No. But I just wanted to show you guys. Look.
Oh my God.
Here, I'll show it on the camera.
Lord.
Oh.
I don't know that you're going to be able to.
And if you're a victim of domestic violence.
But paramedics were called and they couldn't get any of my veins to put in medicine. Mm-hmm. And they had to use my brachial artery, which is the main artery in your arm.
Don't let him tease you.
So bad.
I was the one that done that. God. I got tired of his ass. And
Kim just like, "Boom, you're going to come here right
Shut
now.
The hell up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Y'all went to The Price is Right. She was gripping on. Right.
Oh, yes, The Price is Right.
Oh, my gosh, we had so much fun.
We had a blast.
Our names weren't called, but, you know.
The Price was Wrong.
I actually, when it started, you had to, like, put your name in the bucket or whatever.
Yeah.
And when we sat down and the whole thing started, I thought, "Dear God, don't let them call my name.
Do not let them call my name. When we went to the Wheel of Fortune one, mm-hmm. I'd put my name in and then
immediately regretted it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just want to enjoy the same thing.
I've been to the Price is Right one many years and, you know, quite a few mm-hmm. years in a row. And every year that I do that and put my name in, I'm like, "Dang, I hope they don't call me." And then next year, I'm not going to register. Yeah. I'm just going to go and enjoy myself watching. And right. I have to worry about them calling me up there. And I forget every single year and I sign up and I'm like, "Oh, dang."
That's what happens with dementia. But not only are they calling people to play, but they also call names out just to give out prizes.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I hope they call my name out for that.
I'd like a nice prize.
Yeah, I'd like a $25 gift card to Amazon, mm-hmm. you know? But, I mean, one person, they called out the name at the very last one because the two people lost the showcase. So they just gave away a trip to Vegas, I think is what it was.
Keep it. Yeah, I'll take the cash.
Right. But I just thought, you know, I hope they just call my name for that. I don't want to be going up there and answering any questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they just get all in the nitty gritty. And then everyone, first of all, if you've ever watched The Price is Right,
where are you from? What you do?
People be crazy too. I mean, they just run in
and crazy.
And I thought, you know, if they call my name, I'm going to walk slow. I'm not excited about this.
That will be heavy.
Right?
Well, yeah, there was one little old lady that got to spin the wheel, and she couldn't do it. Almost went under when she tried to
do it. The host had to help her spin it.
Bless her little heart.
Yeah, it was real cute, though. We had a good time.
We did.
Because, like, we were at the Anderson Casino for it.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful place. I think we went with Grandma there to watch The Temptations.
I know that's where her and I went to see Winona.
Oh, yeah, okay. I remember watching The Temptations with Grandma, and I thought you were there, too.
I don't recall that.
Okay. But during The Price is Right, they leave all the tables and chairs out, so you have a nice sitting area. But, you know, I wish that they would have served, like, drinks, maybe a little snack or something.
You can get stuff.
Oh, yeah, we should have.
Yeah.
No, but that buffet is seafood. Oh, and it's $50 a person.
It was $50?
Yeah, the buffet place that's in the casino. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's $50 a person. I went with my grandma and my uncle several years ago. And we walked in there, and it, I mean, like I said,
seafood. $50
a person.
Everything.
And at $50, you know, I'm just thinking, oh my God, I can't wait. But as soon as we walked in there, I just saw all the seafood. No, it was just seafood.
You guys were a mile lobster from the Golden Corral. You don't love yourselves.
I
would have went there and wobbled inside.
Right. I remember all I had. I had a good amount of it because I'm thinking, you know, at $50, I want to get as much food as I can.
Crab cakes, crab legs, lobster tails.
They had all of that, which is why it was so expensive. But right. I got mashed potatoes, macaroni and cheese, and then the hush puppies.
I hate
them. It was good.
I'd be good. Right. I think you would like scallops. I think that would be something like you would
scallop
like.
Potatoes?
No, it's a little, it's from a clam, but it's round, it's solid, it's not slimy whatsoever, and it's white when you cook it. Mm-hmm. So it very texturally and a lot like chicken.
Okay.
But it's usually pan sear it in some butter and herbs and
cook the flavor on it.
Yeah, it's so good.
I don't mind fish and chips, but I remember when I mean a couple years ago when I last visited Gemma in Ocean City, Maryland. Yeah. I went out there and she wanted to go to this crab place because I mean that's just what people do out
I love crab
in Maryland
legs.
I guess but they had crab and all this stuff and I was like, you know, I hope they got chicken tenders because I'm not eating that crab. But she ordered this crab dip and she's like, now Shane, you have to taste this crab dip, you can't even taste the crab in it. And I'm telling you, I tasted the crab
like crab rangoon.
Was that when we went?
I don't remember if you were there or not. It might have been the time before that.
I
know I was with you the last two times that you went.
Okay, then yeah, you probably were. It was the place that had, oh my gosh, what's that guy's name? I can't think of what his
Guy
name
Fieri?
Is. No, it was a seafood place, and they had a little statue of him outside, sitting down. It was like...
Oh, the Gordon Fisherman?
No, I'm thinking of... The guy, oh my gosh.
Emerald?
The guy who plays Mr. Rogers.
Fred Rogers.
Who plays him in the movie.
Oh, in the movie.
Oh, Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, okay. Yes. Tom Hanks plays the character.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump, yeah. So they had a little statue of Forrest Gump sitting at the chair outside of it. Wow. It was like, it was named the same
place. It was Bubba Gump's.
Yeah, Bubba Gump's.
Okay, yeah, that's like a chain.
Okay. Yeah, I had no idea.
That had to have been a few times ago because I wasn't with you.
Okay.
All kinds of shrimp.
I've always wanted to go there, but I've never been.
Well, I mean, it wasn't great for me because I don't do the seafood.
He hates it.
Yeah, no, I can't do it.
You're really limited when you're kids and you have two siblings. If you go out to a place to eat, you take turns deciding, but... We were limited on where we could go by what he would eat there. So I really didn't get a turn, and I ate bitter all these years.
Every time I go to the Yummy in Muncie, that Chinese place, they have really good shrimp and fish. And
oh, yeah. Every time
lobster. I always go there and get seafood stuff. I don't get Chinese stuff when I'm there.
Every time the food sanitization people at the government let them reopen, it's always good.
Oh, yeah.
When they I stopped going about the fourth time they were shut down for insanitary.
I don't think that's happened for a while, at least not that I've heard.
Now, when Josh and I were growing up at Grandma's house, Grandma would keep this, and it's brilliant. I feel like more people need to do this. But in her fridge, Josh, do you remember what she kept in that bottom drawer when we were young?
Bottom drawer in our fridge.
The
bottom.
I know.
Oh,
it didn't vibrate.
Refilled bottles of water.
No, that was when we got older. No.
That syringe for the turkey, injecting the butter into it.
I have apples in mine.
You talk about anxiety. Anxiety is when you go over to Grandma's house and you see all of the little butter bowls in the fridge and you're trying to find butter and you open it up and it's like leftover
spaghetti,
salami.
Chili.
Yeah.
That's been in there for.
And there's
two
nothing
weeks.
So unappetizing when you're opening something thinking that it's going to be butter and it's like spaghetti.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh,
well,
no.
And Grandma was not the type to let leftovers rot in the fridge. They were going to be used.
Yeah, but no, when we were growing up, when we were real little, in the bottom drawer of the fridge was the Little Debbie drawer.
Oh, I don't recall.
You don't
that.
Remember that?
So I remember being next young. To the fridge.
So, and I remember, like I said, we were really young, but I remember going up to Grandma if the Little Debbies were out and telling Grandma, Grandma, we need groceries.
Grandma,
we're out of
groceries. We're going to starve to death.
That's funny.
Yeah. So she'd be like, oh, okay. So we have to go uptown, you know, to get us some groceries.
But, we were real cute little kids, little
so
chubby
cute.
Cherubs.
Yeah,
so
sweet. So cute. But I saw this and I wanted to tell you guys about it because it made me, of course, think of that Little Debbie drawer. But have you guys ever heard of the Little Debbie Park?
Yeah.
Yes. I've seen it on Facebook.
Yes. So it is a family friendly park and it's actually located near the McKee Food headquarters. And so it's in Collegedale, Tennessee.
Sure. Collegedale.
But if you look through all the photos of it, it's actually dedicated to celebrating all the Little Debbie snacks.
That's so
And
funny.
So they have play areas that are all themed around. Oh my gosh, Josh has. You only got one
my
over
honey
there?
Bun. You listen, y'all are on diabetic and on a diet, so.
Hey, yeah. I had a donut the other day.
Suffer.
You had a donut?
I
Is
did.
That why your legs cut off?
No. They had somebody brought in donuts at work the other day.
You know, it's not fair that Josh is
you
the
got
one
the
that can
cannons,
eat.
Too.
That Josh can have all these sweets and stuff, and I'm over here, I've been eating healthy for a long time, and I'm the one that ends up in the hospital.
Go get some of that water.
Though.
Go get some of that water from the river in your mouth. You'll lose 10 pounds.
So anyway, if you go to Little Debbie Park, they have everything's themed after all
it
the Little Debbies.
So cute.
They have Swiss rolls themed things. They have oatmeal cream pie themed things. Now, let me just say, when it comes to oatmeal cream pie, I don't mind a good one. But if it has too much filling, I don't want it.
I like the small ones because the big ones have too
much.
Me
too. Too much filling. It's just, I feel the same way when it comes to Oreos.
Yeah.
If it has too much filling in it, it's just too sweet.
I get the regular Oreos because I don't like the double stuff.
What's your favorite?
I like the thin ones too.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Little Debbie thing? I wish I had Hormone Harmony when I was younger and still on my monthly visits for me at Flo. They were always the worst time of the month for me. And then when that monster menopause come creeping around, it was no different. I started taking Hormone Harmony because I was tired of suffering through hormone changes constantly raging in my body. I wasn't sleeping. I was always getting hot flashes that were so bad that I swore I started smelling bacon. Whether your Aunt Flo is still paying you a visit or you want some help unmasking the menopause monster, Hormone Harmony has made it easier than ever. They're zero sugar, gluten, and dairy-free, non-GMO or third-party testing products help trap the symptoms of hormonal imbalance. Hot flashes and night sweats, feeling groggy, poor sleep, racing thoughts and low moods, uncomfortable gas and bloating, or even a low sex drive. Hormone Harmony can help with all of that. Don't you think it's time to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code MYSTERY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com. And use the code MYSTERY for 15% off today.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Nutty Buddies.
Mmm. Probably little Christmas trees.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Those are the superior of the snack cakes.
Yeah.
I'm always super excited this time of year when they have the pumpkins.
I do like the little pumpkin. That's the only pumpkin thing I'll eat is the little jack-o'-lanterns.
Mm-hmm. And the fudge rounds.
I thought that was like Reese's.
They do have the pumpkins, but they do. They're little like Debbie has
must not have one.
They're very good.
They are really good.
And we got like I'm a gel pumpkin.
Now, when we go to the park, because I mean, someday we're going to have to go to this park.
I want to go. Yeah. Did you look to see exactly where in Tennessee it was at?
College Dale.
I know that, but in what part of Tennessee is that? Did you look?
It's college between the north and south. I don't know, Kim. But anyway, if you go there, there's walking trails. And along the trails, there's lots of, you know, it's beautiful greenery and all those things that you would expect to find on walking trails. But they also have like these little cute decorations that are themed towards the little Debbies along your
walk. All kinds of snack cakes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm just telling you what, I'd have to have a little baggie.
I know.
Look at that little cute Christmas tree.
I'd open a box when I got there. It'd be empty by the end.
No kidding. I mean, they should sell it. I mean, they should have like a concession stand there or something.
Definitely.
Oh, they should. That could be a missed opportunity.
All right.
You can go sell it out of the back of the mystery machine. Yeah.
But they also
sell them out of the trunk.
They also have little picnic areas. And I thought that was so cute. You can bring your meal there, eat your little Debbies. And then what I also really enjoyed about the park, because I feel like so many parks don't do this, and I like this, but they have educational displays that will talk about the history of all the little Debbie brands.
Ooh.
And they have like the history, and they also tell you how the snacks are made and all the educational
it's
pieces.
One of my favorite shows, how it's made. I love
it. Oh, my gosh. I'll
be eating something and I'm like, how they make this? YouTube.
That's what I do too. Whenever I'm sick, there's two go-tos that I'll watch, Golden Girls and How It's Made. How It's Made, I can just put it on, watch it, fall asleep, wake back up, and I'm in the middle of it, and I don't care. Whatever they're making.
I just, the other night, watched How a Fig Newton was made, and I was enjoying every second of it.
There is one episode that I wish I never watched, and it was How Bacon is Made.
Okay.
And it came on, like, when I was sick. I wasn't watching that one. It was one of the next ones. And I just remember opening my eyes, and there was the top of a pig. And I thought, what the crap is that on a conveyor belt for? And you saw him just slicing away, and I thought,
no.
What is that? And then, like, the next scene, you see bacon, and I thought, oh, I don't want to know how that's made. And, like, there's some things you just don't want to know.
Oh, yeah.
And bacon is one of those things, I just wish I didn't know that it comes off the back of a pig.
Now you get that expression, you don't need to see how the sausage is
made. Yeah, I didn't want to see that at all.
I actually, years ago when I was in school, I had every single home economic class that that school offered.
A lot of good that did.
And one of the advanced food ones, we had to take a tour of a butcher plant.
What class was this?
It was a home economics class.
My mama would have had a note, and I would sign that
Don't
note.
Don't sign this permission slip, mama.
Well, I mean, we didn't have to, because you could watch them actually kill the cow.
Jesus.
And then the tour just shows you the whole process of, you know, the different cuts of meat and stuff. Well, there was a couple girls. There was a couple girls in my class that did not really want to do this.
No, so I would have been with them.
I don't need to see how the cow, you know, I'm here to school to learn.
We all know how it's done. Get killed. We don't want to watch it.
Well, they both had to excuse themselves to go to the bathroom when we first got there.
Oh, yeah.
And they, beforehand. And
the devil's lettuce.
The devil's lettuce, yes. They beforehand, and nobody had a clue because, I mean, there's not a great smell in that place anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, nobody had any idea, and they were just hiring kites the whole thing.
Bless them.
Everything looked good, too, I'm sure.
That steak looks delicious.
They're a grill around here.
No, I saw when someone asked someone how to cook a steak. It was from a movie. Woody Harrelson, the actor, said it. And he was like, just wipe its nose and cut the horns off and slap it on a plate. I was like,
So you guys know how sometimes I think of random things, right? So the other day I got out of the shower. And, you know, everyone has their own ritual. And, wow, are you thinking of me naked, Kim, because I said I got out of the shower?
No.
You get your mind out of the gutter.
No, I'm thinking, what the hell could he come up with coming out of the shower?
Well, if you
That's when you get your greatest thoughts.
Right. Oh, please. That's what I'm doing my thinking. But anyway, I get out of the shower, and I have this thing that as soon as I get out of the shower, I will clean my ears with Q-tips.
Same.
But isn't it funny how so many, like, even commercials tell us this.
Don't put it
Doctors
in
tell you. Yeah, don't everyone put it in knows that you're not supposed to use Q-tips
and
for
everybody
your ear,
does it anyway.
But everyone does it. And you know Q-tips, the brand, they know it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's for makeup and babies. Yeah.
So I looked at the box to see if it told you not to use it or if they're actually selling it for that, you know? And it actually says a warning on the box that, you know, you shouldn't use these for your ear. But if you do, it says only do the outer ear. And I thought, well, I'm not going to do that because I feel so dirty if my ears are dirty.
I do too. I do peroxide once a week,
like,
too.
Like all week, I can just think my ear is just overflowing. I mean, not rational, you know? I'm just so used to cleaning my ear.
I check it several times a day because you know, some people get so much wax built up that you can see, like, you're sitting there trying to pay attention as they're talking and all I see is the
that's gonna fall out,
the orange.
My ex-husband, one year when we went to Tennessee, my ex-husband, we went swimming and he, you know, dove under and stuff, and he had so much wax built up in one of his ears it sucked up against his eardrum.
Oh my God.
And he had such a horrible headache and he couldn't take it anymore. So he ended up having to go to the emergency room so they could flush his ear out to get that away from his eardrum.
Lord.
Yeah, I do peroxide once a week. I put it in a little dropper and put it
in. Yeah, no, I feel so dirty if I don't use them.
I even bring them when I travel because
me too.
I feel gross. Yeah. Like, it's like taking a shower on a humid day when you come out, you're sweaty instantly. Mm. Like, I could be clean as a whistle. And if I don't clean my ears, I'm ugh.
Right.
I don't have to do it every time I take a shower, but I do it at least once a week.
Yeah. Now, are we talking about Q-tips, Kim, or are you talking about a suction?
All the above.
Q-tips. Uh-huh. Q-tips.
I walked into Kim's bathroom one day and there was this big old yanker.
Yanker.
Suctioned up against the. Suctioned up against the sign of her tongue.
8 inches.
I hate to tell you this. I don't know whose house you were in, but that sure as hell wasn't mine.
Oh, look at her. Denied. It must have been. It must have been.
Now, my landlord, I think, is homophobic because the shower walls, not really, just as a joke, because the shower walls, suction cups, they've got like. It's that plastic where it's like texture.
It's a little texture, so nothing can get a good suction. Seal.
You know, a man picked that up and put that up there.
I was like, a lonely person.
A woman would have been like, no, we got to have something flat so things can suction to it.
Yes.
You know, for my loofah.
For my shower mirror. I got to shave
my
shower.
My shower mirror. So all right, we should go ahead and get into my mystery today because you guys know how sometimes I can go on and on and on.
I'm unfamiliar.
Wait, sometimes? I thought that was every single time.
Josh said that he saw my paper and he's like, I saw the word introduction and I knew dang well that was yours.
I didn't want to look for table of contents.
Part one.
Shit.
Shit far. I have a good shit far one for today. Okay, so I'm going to take us to Cleveland in the 1970s.
Exotic.
I know. Now, when I was writing this episode, I thought, you know, it's so funny that we've been to Cleveland twice now.
I was going
to
say, wasn't we just there for the balloon thing?
Yeah. So this was not far between the balloon thing and when this story takes place. So the times are still the same, if you remember from that episode. Mm-hmm. So the 1970s... It was a turbulent time for Cleveland. There was a lot of change happening because in the 1970s, the industrial backbone of Cleveland was starting to really weaken. And if you remember in the balloon episode, the factories had already left. So they're getting to that point. It's like the beginning of the point. So everyone's starting to feel weird because of it, I think, because they kind of know the cycle that's about to happen.
Shit's about to get real.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All those factories were starting to, you know, starting to close one by one.
The rust belt was rusting.
Exactly. And so all those people were suddenly losing their jobs. And so, I mean, can you imagine how stressful that would be? But because of it, the unemployment rate starts soaring. Mm-hmm. And the city, that's when, during this period of the 1970s, is when they were given the name The Mistake by the Lake. And you remember me talking about that in the balloon episode. So the morale of Cleveland was very low. Residents were grappling with that economic hardship that was happening.
Got a little ass, get a little cash.
Josh would have been a
always
survivor.
Always got something to fall back on.
So there were some organizations who were trying to look for something to kind of brighten the mood around Cleveland. And so because of that, sports were becoming a critical escape for people. And now Josh and I can't relate because we never have been in a sports, but there's a lot of people who enjoy sports. Kim, you like watching football.
I love watching football.
Oh. Absolutely miserable. She won.
I don't mind a good volleyball here.
Someone
and there
was trying to give her football tickets. Was it the Colts?
The Colts, yeah.
And Kim was like, I was with her. She goes, I probably can't talk Shane into going, so I'll have to deny him.
Oh, I would go. I like the food and football. That's right.
Well, it was when Rick was here, so I didn't want to, you know, mess up our day with Basement Rick.
Now I'll watch. You mean two whole teams of men at their physical peak? And jock straps and tight pants. I'll go.
And a lot of men go to them.
And nachos.
And if I had more than like 5 hour notice, because it was a very short notice.
My anxiety could never.
Josh has just been hanging around the bathroom. I work here. You need someone to hold your hand.
Does that urinal need more eyes?
So sports became that critical escape for all the people in Cleveland. It was a way for them to forget their daily struggles of, you know, losing their job. And if you hadn't lost your job yet, you kind of know it very well may happen soon. So, I mean, just a lot of anxiety.
Save them
happening.
Pennies.
Yeah. So the Indians, which is the Cleveland Indians, were struggling. And this is a baseball team. I had to Google because I don't watch sports. Kim, are you giving me a look?
No,
you roll those eyes.
I'm
one more
rolling
time.
My eyes so hard right
no,
now.
No, I was sitting here thinking. I was like, "Does he mean Native Americans or people from the country of India?"
Yeah. You two are ridiculous.
Did they change their name? I feel like the Indians. I thought that they changed
I don't know.
Their name.
They might have.
Or they were
a lot of teams that has
the Native
this Native,
American
yeah, Native yeah. American. They've been trying to pressure the Chiefs into doing it for a long time.
Oh, I saw Klingman's Dome in Tennessee just recently changed their name to the original Cherokee name. I forget. It starts with a K. I cannot remember. Mm. We know names
cool.
are not my strength. But yeah.
I don't think they're anybody here's cool. strength. Yeah.
So the Indian baseball team was struggling, and I guess, Josh, this is news for us. Kim will know. But there's like an American League standing among all the baseball teams. Mm-hmm. And so they were commonly at the very bottom of it, doing very bad. So because of that, the attendance at the Cleveland Stadium was really bad. There were always a lot of empty seats. It wasn't doing well. So the team...
For the gays, basically, it's time for them to sashay away.
So the Indians were desperate to boost their fan engagement, bring more people out to the stadium to increase their revenue.
Take your shirts off.
So that all leads up to this date of May 29th, 1974. The game was the Indians versus the Rangers. And this was just 6 days before this event happened that I'm going to talk about in a minute. But I believe this game was in Texas, and the Indians played the Texas Rangers in Arlington. So, yeah, it was in Texas, evidently.
Oh.
Yeah. So
fascinating.
Right. So during that game in Arlington, a lot of tension started flaring between the teams because of a hard slide of one of the players in the second base.
How dare they do this thing I know of?
So this was the Indians player John Lowenstein, I believe is how his last name is pronounced. Now, the Rangers second baseman, his name is Lenny Randall. He had retaliated because of this, and he ended up punching the Indians pitcher.
Oh, can't do that.
No, not allowed. And that person's name, the pitcher, was Milt Wilcox. So because of that, both benches were then cleared.
Oh, yeah.
And this all resulted in a massive brawl.
Fight.
That took several minutes to subside.
I would have been sitting there eating my popcorn like,
Game just began.
Rip his shirt off.
Right.
You wouldn't believe how fast a crowd goes crazy when there's a fight on the team.
Oh, yes,
between
I do.
The teams. It's ridiculous.
I've seen Animal Planet, the baboons. I know how sports fans are. It's the same thing.
So the Rangers fans, they started throwing food and beer onto the field at all the Indian players.
See, baboons.
Indians players, yeah. Mm-hmm. So after the game, a reporter had asked the Rangers manager, Billy Martin, if he was worried about retaliation in Cleveland. And Martin had sarcastically replied, and he said, "Nah, they won't have enough fans there to worry about."
That is a good one, though.
It is good. However, if you want to make some people angry, that's what you say.
Yeah.
So his dismissive comment angered a lot of Cleveland fans.
I can't imagine.
And so that really set the stage for a heated rematch. Because, of course, you know, they didn't finish the game, so they're going to have a rematch.
You know, I can normally empathize with so many people, but I'm trying to, like... Like, I can't fathom what it's like to give a damn about baseball team to the point to where something someone says about them is going to anger me.
Yeah. But you also have to remember that for Cleveland at that time, because everyone was struggling and the emotions were high. So by them saying that, I think that really like just got all the Clevelanders were like, you know what? We're not someone you make fun of.
I get it now. It's like if someone were to come for a gay man's chosen pop icon diva.
Mm-hmm.
Like if, for me, for example, if they were like, Dolly Parton's a B-I-T-C-H, I would fight them.
Yeah. We'll show up at the stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in Cleveland, the newspapers and the radio stations all started talking about this upcoming rivalry that was going to be happening. And it was really brewing among both teams and the people in Cleveland.
A brewing.
So the headlines highlighted Martin's insult. And they also were talking about the brawl that happened in the previous game. And even talk shows were encouraging their fans to show up and support the Indians in Cleveland when the game starts. So this all leads up to June 4th. And by that point, this game was the talk of the town. Fans were eager to get revenge on the players, on the person who said that. Like, they were just all there to support the Indians, and they were upset. And that wasn't just on the field. Like, the players were also, I mean, there was a lot of tension between the players, but all the fans who were suddenly coming in, all of them, there was a lot of fans flooding in. Yeah, and they were just mad.
How dare they say?
Well, also leading up to this, there was a marketing strategy that went out. And so in order to help boost the attendance, the Indians management had announced a special promotion. And they called it 10-cent beer night.
Oh, God.
I know. If you can get...
They did this to themselves.
Bad idea.
10 cents, get you a beer. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be giving beer to a bunch of angry people.
It's going to be the flattest, skunkiest beer you've ever had.
But, like, just imagine, like, how brilliant that was, like, of a marketing strategy. Because you know that people are already hard on their times. And 10-cent beer night... I'm telling you. So,
come and get it.
Just to elaborate on that a little bit more, fans could purchase a 12-ounce cup of beer for just 10 cents. Ugh. And that was a lot cheaper than the normal price of beer.
The smell of that place.
Oh, my God, I know. It would smell like urine.
Yeah.
And To make it even more crazy, they let out the promotion and they told everyone it's unlimited.
Oh my God.
10 cent.
You beer can't be night, doing unlimited.
As much as you want.
How many
what
people
could go wrong?
How many people got alcohol poisoning and died?
I bet.
So
they're probably happy too.
Right. So there were no restrictions on the number of beers someone could buy. So the team had held several similar beer nights like this before. There was no incidents. People could just purchase their 10-cent beer and have at it, you know, whatever.
But they were mad.
So the marketing strategy of the Indians, they all thought this thing was going to be very successful. You know, you're already doing a lot of marketing that the news is covering, and this 10-cent beer night is going to get even more people in. What could go wrong? Last time they've done it, it went well. So management hoped that promotion would draw a large crowd and that that large crowd would invigorate the team's base. You know, the more people you can get out and you, and I, you know, I've been to a few games and the games are a lot different if there's only a few people in the stands.
Oh, yeah.
But the moment that your stands are full, everyone just has this momentum.
Yeah.
Everyone's feeding and, you know, providing it to each other.
10 cents by today's standards from that time would be 50 cents. So this would be like 50 cent beer.
Yeah.
People would go crazy.
Yeah. One fifth the cost that it normally would have been. So they anticipated kind of a festive atmosphere. Everyone would be happy, drinking beer, it'd be a party, and that ultimately it would boost the morale of the team also.
Not everybody are happy drunks.
Right. So we're going to find out.
So game day comes up. It's June 4th, 1974, and over 25,000 people attended.
I'd turn around and leave.
That more than doubled their usual attendance. I know Josh has been like, nope, too busy. People.
Not worth it.
The crowd included those diehard fans. It also included curious locals, college students, and people who were honestly simply attracted to the cheap beer.
Right. You know? Something to do.
Yeah. And the weather, it was warm. It was humid in the evening, but that night would be the perfect night at the ballpark because, you know, those humid nights get cooler off. They get cooler off in the evening. So the energy at the field was palpable. Everyone could feel it. The fans were buzzing with the anticipation of the game starting. Everyone's getting their beer, having a good time in the stands. And many fans arrived early to tailgate. And they were consuming the beer and the other alcohol beverages in the parking lot.
Doing a pregame.
Yeah.
One beer is enough for me. Good God.
I hate beer. I can't do it.
I can't do beer.
And reports said that there were some fans who were actually already intoxicated before they entered the stadium.
No.
Pre-gaming.
Say it ain't so.
Kegs and eggs.
They do that today.
I know. So security at this stadium, very minimal. You know, when you've been struggling for a while to get people, paying for security is not the top priority, you know? And so there were probably 50 police officers on duty that
for day. 25,000.
Yeah. And you know, when you hear 50 police officers are on duty, that in my mind, that sounded like a lot, but not if you think how many people are going to be at a football stadium. That's nothing.
Baseball stadium.
Yeah. Baseball stadium. Thank you, Kim, with your sport.
Sports arena.
She's our sport expert, people. So as the Rangers took the field that night, they were met with a lot of boos.
Literally. Yeah.
And they were getting a lot of obscene gestures.
No.
People were mad and they were drunk and they were all feeding off of each other, you know? Well, those Indian fans started throwing lit firecrackers into the Rangers' dugout. So, I mean, they are drunk, they are stupid, and they are throwing firecrackers. I just can't imagine, like, the Rangers come on the thing, and everyone's flipping them off and mooning them, and someone's just like, I got firecracker.
It's the holy trinity of white trash.
Someone threw a fire. I mean, can you imagine, like, getting into your dugout, and someone throws a firecracker? I'd have a heart attack. I mean, I would freak out.
I'd grab the bat.
I mean, because I don't know if you guys have ever been somewhere and someone lets off firecrackers, but that is very startling. If
I've you're been not around teenage it. Boys before. They
I
always
bet you
see,
have, John.
Ugh. Even as a teenage boy myself, I'm like, you smell.
Right.
No, my nephew likes to do that.
Oh, that's funny.
He's like 13.
Sure.
He'll, especially around the 4th of July. But they buy so many, he has them on tap
right.
all year round.
You're like,
so
are
you never
these?
Know.
Right.
If he walks up to you quietly, you're like,
right.
be prepared.
So because people were throwing firecrackers and, you know, obscene gestures were happening, that prompted action. And so the umpire, I don't know how he reacted. I know that he issued warnings, but I just imagine him like turn around, you stop that. You stop it right now.
Well, in this game.
Yeah.
Don't make me.
So he issues a warning and the game continues, you know. Because, you know, when an umpire issues a warning, everything's better now.
Mm-hmm. It's like a judge.
Yeah, everyone's like, okay, I'll stop. I'll be good. Well, the game goes on. So we get to the third inning. And by the third inning, I mean, people are, if you thought they were drunk before the game started, third inning, they drunker than a skunk.
Aren't there four innings?
Kim, how many innings are in baseball?
Is that four?
I think there's four, but it could go on if
three too
it's
many.
Eight.
Eight.
It's either eight, eight. Or nine.
Jesus that's Christ.
That's why I don't go to baseball.
I'm
the
thinking
games
four
last
is too many.
That's what
eight.
I thought. So by the third inning, fans started throwing hot dogs.
Oh my God.
Empty beer cups. And even rocks.
I'm white trash and I'm in trouble.
Where the crap did they get rocks from?
I'm guessing they just found them outside.
They brought them from
brought
home.
Brought them in and they're like, you know. But I mean, good point, Kim. People, I mean, it was premeditated.
It was definitely premeditated because they're not going to find no rock right. in a stadium.
I'm going to go right. get drunk and whoop some ass.
But throwing hot dogs. I mean,
that's
those
wasteful.
Hot dogs are expensive. What you throwing a hot dog for?
All them lips and assholes that went into making that.
I like hot dogs.
So, we know you do. You eat them whole.
She'd be at that stadium. Hey, boy, you like this? But anyway. Okay, so.
Ridiculous.
In fact, a Rangers player narrowly avoids being hit by a bottle thrown from the stands.
This is
so,
why we can't have.
I mean, nice not only things. Right. Not only are they just throwing this stuff out to the field, they're trying to hit people.
Right.
You know,
that's
so, I mean,
not they, good.
They're mad, and they're you know, when you're in a crowd like that, and everyone's doing it, it's so easy to fall in and just become a part of it.
Crowd
and
mentality.
That's what happened. Yeah. So by the fourth inning, a woman hopped over the fence and ran toward the Indians on deck circle. She lifts her shirt, and she exposed herself to all the players and the crowd.
Dear heaven, that's how you find a husband.
Uh-huh. Josh would have been like, girl, put your shirt back on.
Scoot over.
You know how many times I've seen women do that at concerts?
Oh, yeah.
What I think is funny is, like, there are people who will jump onto, like, game on baseball fields things. And streakers.
Oh, yeah. You
know,
you hear
and
about
then
them
you
all
just
the
get
time.
Some security people going after them.
If I was a woman, I would show Dirk Bentley my hoo-haws. I'd throw my panties up on stage, right. too.
So, anyway, because of that happening, security escorts her off the field. But if the crowd was already fired up, they're fired up even more. So it just, like, really got them going. Because, I mean, if there's anything white straight men like, it's seen some boobies.
Titties.
And that just gets their blood a-going. So by the next inning, the fifth inning, a naked man sprinted onto the field and slid into second base. The crowd roared with laughter. They loved it. They were applauding
that
him.
That could not have felt good.
I know.
I would have said, ooh, but baseball fans are
must
not
be
the,
cold.
The most attractive.
So as security started chasing him down, just imagine the whole stadium just loving it, clapping, applauding, you know, all these things. Well, the next inning, the sixth inning comes about, and two men.
You should have known there wasn't four innings right there. You just said
I
six.
I have forgotten. I wrote this a couple of weeks ago. Okay, you calm down. Okay. So two men, one of whom was a father with his young son, jumped onto the field and mooned all the fans in the bleachers.
With her son there.
Yeah. Now, that was met with more cheers, but ultimately, the game's integrity of just getting them to be able to play normally, you could tell it was all starting to deteriorate.
Like all the pick-me people were starting to come out.
Yeah, like, you know, it was hard to manage the crowd by that point. Well, at that point, I probably would have just been like, all right, guys, we're going to shut this down, you know. But they kept playing. And then the seventh inning comes about.
Jesus Christ.
And during the seventh inning, firecrackers was then thrown into the Rangers' bullpen. And those firecrackers...
There's bowls now?
I know! Ugh. Now...
You don't know what a bullpen is?
Why don't you explain it
is
to
it
us,
Is it like the
Kim?
Dugout?
No, it's where the pitchers go to warm up.
Oh.
Okay.
Neat.
Yeah, cool. All right. So those firecrackers narrowly misses a lot of players who were in that bullpen. And so the Rangers were getting increasingly concerned for their safety by this point. Like, just so many things are happening. And not only was this stuff happening to the field, it was being targeted toward them. So that was going on. But in addition to that, you also have to keep in mind that because this beer was really cheap, and when people are drinking beer, they want some food too. But those lines at the concessions were really long.
I bet.
And those vendors were struggling to keep up with the demand from 25,000 people wanting this cheap beer.
Could you imagine how much vomit was around?
Right. Or the bathrooms would have been horrid. Oh my God. Everyone not washing their hands. So because of the long lines, some fans found out that they could bypass those lines by bribing those vendors. Or you could just take the beer.
Oh,
just
my God.
Steal it because there's just so many people and they can't monitor all of it. So some fans were even just stealing it. Well, because of that, the intoxication level of all of those 25,000 people was soaring. Because, again, there's no purchase limits on the beer. Many of those fans consumed excessive amounts of beer. So because of it, brawls started happening in the stand. People were fighting each other. And the atmosphere in the stands was also becoming increasingly volatile. It was really starting to get a little unsafe because when people start fighting, more people will be brought into it,
right.
You know, mm-hmm. And they're drunks. Well, stadium officials by that point started to realize, like, okay, guys, we're losing control of the crowd, and it might be getting unsafe.
We should have stopped at four innings.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the ninth inning, the game was tied 5-5. And the Indians rallied to tie the game. So they just get that tie score. And that heightened the crowd's excitement because, oh my gosh, we're tied. You know, okay, here we go. Well, the potential for a comeback victory had also added to that mentality of the crowd. Because like I said, the Indians weren't winning, hadn't won for a long time. Suddenly they might win.
Right.
After this whole thing, you
especially
know.
Especially for like a rematch for talking smack.
And so the crowd was, I mean, if you thought they were heightened before, they're getting rowdier and rowdier. Well, the Rangers outfielder, Jeff Burrows, he was in the right field when a young fan ran onto the field and attempted to steal his cap and glove.
Jesus Christ.
Talk about bold.
Well, Jeff confronted that fan, but in the scuffle, he tripped and fell. And from the dugout, the Rangers manager, Billy Martin, saw Jeff go down and believed that he was being attacked by that fan. So Martin grabbed a bat and led his entire team onto the field to go rescue Jeff.
Oh, my God.
Well, seeing the Rangers charge on the field with bats angered all the fans. So hundreds of fans saw that as, okay, now it's an invitation.
Yeah, it's a brawl. It's on now.
Yes. So fans who were armed with knives, chains,
and hell?
I know. And well, get this. And pieces of the stadium seats.
My God.
Just breaking off seats by that point.
America!
They storm onto the field. And so players from both teams suddenly found themselves fighting off these drunk fans. Indian manager Ken. I can't pronounce his last name.
The Indians manager.
Ken.
Maybe it's Aspromonte. I don't know. Ken. He instructed all his players, hey guys, you need to arm yourselves because all these drunk fans are coming on and they're probably not going to be looking on what your uniform says. It's just crazy at that point. So he tells all those Indian players, you need to arm yourselves. So the players formed a protective circle and they start swinging bats to keep the mob at bay. Oh
my God. It's like ancient Rome.
I know. Well, fans tore up bases. They were stealing bats and gloves and vandalizing all the equipment. The batting cage was pulled down by the fans.
Jesus Christ.
And parts of the field were set on fire. The scoreboard was even damaged.
This is why we have to go through security. It takes so damn long to get into anything these days.
And the field was littered with trash and debris from ripping everything and causing fires.
There's just a janitor watching it all crying on the side.
Probably. Oh, probably. Yeah.
So the crew chief, Nestor Chilak, I'm guessing, was struck by a chair at that point. And he suffered a deep cut to his head. Well, he realized that this situation was out of control and he declared the game a forfeit in favor of the Rangers because at that point in time, he blamed all of the Indian fans.
Right.
And was saying, okay, you know, Indians forfeit
now.
Y'all
can't behave, now you lose.
Yeah. Well, as you can imagine,
that didn't go over
well.
Oh, no, I bet.
I probably would have announced that after. That's a post.
What do you think all these drunk people?
I know.
Okay, well, we better go home now.
Oh, dang it. Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Maybe next time.
Well, the Cleveland police were then called out to quell the riot.
Oh, you mean all those 50 that they had weren't enough?
No, they called. Right. Yeah, they called the Cleveland police to come in, and officers show up in riot gear. That included mounting units, and they entered You don't know what a mounted unit is?
Oh, I thought you said mounting.
No.
I was like, a mounting unit?
Mounted
unit. What's their number?
You just got a
squad car full of, we're ready to mount.
Right. So tear gas was then deployed to scatter all the rioters.
Good.
And slowly the crowd began to disperse. They were all coughing and shielding their eyes, but they were dispersing. They started, leaving. And after those fans left, the field was in ruins. The stadium was enveloped in a haze of tear gas. So, I mean, just imagine like this after-apocalyptic view.
Did a bomb get dropped here?
I know. Well, players then retreated to their locker rooms, and a lot of them had minor injuries as well. So the official score was recorded as a 9-0 victory for the Rangers. And that was per the MLB rules. Kim, what's the MLB?
It's
Major League Baseball.
No, yeah. It's the National Baseball League.
I believe it's the Major League Baseball.
Major League.
Can you imagine the roads that all those people, drunk people leaving at once, getting in their cars and time to go home.
I know.
And well, I don't see how anybody didn't get killed.
It's really surprising. If the Cleveland police didn't get there like quickly, I'm sure people would have. But that forfeit was, of course, seen as a huge embarrassment for the Indians organization. So reports indicated that 9 fans were arrested, though many more were involved. Dozens of fans, players, and officials suffered injuries, ranging from cuts to bruises. And the Cleveland residents were in shock, and they were ultimately ashamed that all of this would have happened.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
I know.
No home training.
Right. Our grandma would not have approved. She'd have whooped our butts. So there then became a lot of letters going in to the editor and call in to radio shows. All of Cleveland was expressing their anger at both those fans' behavior and the team's management. The incident, in fact, made headlines nationwide. commentators criticized the irresponsibility of offering unlimited cheap beer.
Right. Put a cap on it.
I know. The event was held up as an example of declining social morals in the 70s and the dangers of excessive alcohol consumption. So the MLB commissioner, Bowie Kuhn, I'm guessing, condemned the event and called for an investigation. He emphasized the need for better security and responsible promotions at all stadiums. The MLB also began reviewing policies regarding alcohol sales and stadium security.
Good.
You know,
have a guard by the beer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that one of their rules was that they needed to have so many police officers there per attendance.
Right. You know?
And teams were encouraged to implement stricter controls on alcohol distribution. Also, the Indians' management faced heavy criticism for all of this poor planning. You know, they should have known that all these people were going to be there. They should have planned ahead. They defended their promotion, though, and they cited previous successful beer nights. But they did acknowledge that they did make mistakes. Future promotions included limits on alcohol sales from that point on, and security personnel numbers were increased for all of the next games.
Good.
Right. Now, 10-cent beer night became infamous as a prime example of a promotion gone horribly wrong. It's frequently referenced in discussions about fan behavior and stadium safety.
People go crazy over
sports deal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even when fast food restaurants will have, you know, I've seen, I think one of them the other day was National Hamburger Day. Mm-hmm. They had, I think it was a hamburger for a quarter. And people were like waiting in line hours.
You don't even have to be hungry. You just see a good deal and you're like,
quarter
I got
for a hamburger. That. Yeah.
Right. I want 12.
Let's go tell everyone I know. We got to all go now at once.
Right. So the event to this day remains a notorious chapter in MLB history. It's been featured in documentaries, books, and in retrospectives about baseball as a sport altogether. And teams recognize the importance of balancing promotions with public safety. And they all the teams also recognize that there does need to be limits and regulations need to be clear.
Yeah, a lot of people, they don't know how to say no.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think up to that point, when you were putting together a promotion, you just wanted to be out of the park and go crazy, you know.
And, you know, they were having a very stressful lives and depressed.
Right. And because of that incident, all of the teams around the nation realized that, hey, if we have promotions, we're going to have to set limits. We can't go crazy. And it's ultimately because of this event that happened.
When these drag queen brunches started becoming popular, a lot of places were unlimited mimosas.
Oh, really?
But, I mean, gay men, we're still men. And a lot of men can drink heavily. Mm. And a lot of gay men do, too, just differently. Instead of chugging beers, we're drinking mimosas. And, you know, a group of four gay men would have several pitchers of mimosas. And after a couple, they're like, we got to put a limit on these. So now anywhere you go, usually they'll be like, there's a limit.
Well, and if you think about it, a lot of places have limits now, too. And I just thought initially that those limits at restaurants on, you know, you can buy two beers.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was just because I didn't want to lose money or something. But ultimately, they're going to make a profit on that, on those things.
Well, even buffets, you don't see, like, there used to be buffets called All You Can Eat.
Oh, sure.
But some people, they're like, challenge accepted each and every time they go.
Right.
Oh, and I've heard of people staying there the whole day.
Yeah.
So that they could get three meals out of it.
Ooh.
Well, because of the event, stadiums also increased their security staffing and increased the training for those staff members. Protocols were then made so that everyone could handle unruly crowds if that were to come up. And so those policies were developed and implemented in all of the stadiums. And the incident also influenced not just baseball, but other sports regarding alcohol sales. Many stadiums implemented a cutoff for alcohol sales after a certain point in the game.
It must be high still, because I just saw a picture recently of, it was like someone had taken it from behind the man at a baseball game, and under his seats was at least over 12 of those tall cans of Coors Light.
Oh, wow. Maybe he got some of his friends and stuff to buy more.
I don't know. The caption was like, he must be a millionaire to be able to afford that beers at a stadium.
That's right? No kidding, because shoot, they're $20. Yeah. Ridiculous.
He's like, he done spent his whole paycheck.
Right. Well, it's kind of hard to, you know, monitor how many beers people are buying.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why they implemented a cutoff of alcohol sales after a certain point.
Not like that's one thing that's expected. Mm-hmm. Like, even I'm not a big drinker, but if I were to go to a stadium to watch a sporting event, I would want at least one Bud Light.
Sure. I mean, I'm not drinking it. Every beer I've tasted tastes like urine, like the smell of urine.
Yeah. You don't like black coffee either.
No, not at all. Oh.
They're both acquired tastes.
Yeah.
So because of this whole thing, there was also a greater emphasis being placed on monitoring and addressing fan behavior. Campaigns were promoting positive fan conduct. And that was all introduced nationwide. Like, hey, guys, come on out to the game. Have a good time.
Be nice.
But there is conduct rules that you need to follow so everyone can be safe and have a good time.
We'll put the hose on you.
Right. 10-cent beer night still serves as a stark reminder of how quickly a situation can escalate when safety measures are overlooked. It highlights the responsibility of sports organizations to prioritize the well-being of fans and players.
They need to put like a fire... a sprinkler system out for people being too ruling.
Right. Mm-hmm. And while this night still remains a dark spot in Cleveland's history, it ultimately led to a significant amount of changes that did improve the safety and enjoyment of sporting events. So that's a positive that really came out of this horrible evening.
Lord have mercy.
Right. But that's it for my mystery.
Wow.
Have you guys ever heard of it?
I have not.
I hadn't either. I believe I think a listener submitted it several months ago. So that was really the first time I had ever heard of it. And I thought, let me look more into this. And when I did, I was just thinking, I'm a little surprised that it's not at least taught in our history class in school, because it has such a significant amount of changes that are put into place afterwards.
And that, a good example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It even goes along with like what you do about like laws and states that are still legal but not enforced.
Right.
And some, you know, there's always anytime we have to go through something, like especially it made me think a lot of security that we have to go through to go into a concert or a stadium. Right.
There's
like
a reason.
Metal detectors, because people are bringing in chains, you said, and rocks.
Breaking off seats, setting fires, firecrackers.
Do you have any rocks in your bag? Right.
If that had been today, they would have not gotten in with any of that stuff.
Oh, no. Well, and you also have to think that not only did it impact all the sports and all the stadiums, that also ultimately would have impacted restaurants. You know, like even if you go into a restaurant now, normally there's a limit on beer. If they know that you are physically drunk, most places won't serve you anymore.
Right. Yeah. There is laws about over-serving people.
Yeah.
That one bar by where we went to high school with, near the college, it was down a large flight of cement steps, and if you couldn't make it down the steps,
right,
you couldn't come in.
Right. Yeah, that I remember that place. That was
I only went once.
The floors always felt sticky.
Yeah.
Because of all the
I learned some spilled. People like to take their shoes off when they're dancing at places like that. And people that work there are like, don't do that. Because these floors are disgusting.
No. And I the last thing I'll mention about this whole game is that when I was learning about it, I just kept thinking, you know, there is a lesson to be learned here. And that's that sometimes the best intentions can lead to unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, ultimately, the management of the Indians didn't think that there would be a problem. Right. There hadn't been a problem before.
They assumed people would behave themselves.
And ultimately, you have to also think that they also wanted a lot of people to come because of this whole rivalry that mm-hmm. happened. So the more people they can get to come support the game would prove their enemies wrong. You know, so I can see also why they would have implemented this promotion. They've done it before. It was successful.
This is why I cook everything growing up at family functions. You know, once grandma wasn't able to cook as much.
Right.
Because over the years, you start to learn ways to keep the peace. And that was one thing grandma always, anytime we'd have a big family function, and I hope everyone just gets along and there's no fighting this time.
No, our grandma would say, I hope no one shows their ass.
So I would, you know, well, if I make everything, then the sisters can't argue because mm-hmm. someone forgot to bring something or talk about how it didn't taste right. Or, you know, so I'm like, I'm just going to make everything. That way they can complain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My ex-husband's family, there was no... We couldn't do any kind of get-togethers without some kind of a fight.
Oh, yeah.
And I never understood it because he had the smallest... Well, I mean, he had a lot of smallest brothers.
Smallest what, Kim? He had a small what?
He had a lot of brothers. He had a lot of brothers and one sister, but his dad was a really bad alcoholic, so none of their extended family had anything to do with him. So it was a relatively small family, and I could never understand how... Such a small family could not get along for one day to have one dinner. And I have a huge family. Do I like all my family members? No, but I get along with them.
Right.
You know, they're family. It doesn't make any difference whether you like them or not. They're still family.
Yeah. Any argument that had ever happened at my grandma's house.
Peeling potatoes.
Someone's peeling potatoes.
That's why I always peel. If I peel the potatoes, no one's going to fight because someone else does.
And you always know it because anytime you would hear about it, because you know how families are, they just go and call, oh my gosh, did you hear about this? You hear about that? And so I would hear about it through the grapevine and they'd be like, well, and they'd always start it like this. Well, I was sitting there peeling potatoes, and then she opened her mouth, and then it just went on from there.
I couldn't take it.
Every story, though. And at some point, I'm just thinking, maybe we need instant potatoes.
I used to pray.
No one will die.
I used to pray to be in a waspy family where they just choke everything down and never bring anything up. Because it would take the smallest amount of one of the sisters
a look
saying just one thing and it was on there. It was never like a they said it a few times. It was right from the get-go, what'd you say?
I can remember I think it was a Thanksgiving specifically, one of my ex-husband's brothers, he was the one that usually started it. He had started a big argument and he got so mad that he was standing in the living room and he had a gallon of milk in his hand and he threw the gallon of milk down at the floor and busted it all over the place.
And he didn't punch the wall. What a wimp.
Right.
God.
But also you have to think that if someone's peeling potatoes, that means someone in the argument automatically has a sharp knife.
Oh, yeah. That little silver one, I got it at the house.
Yeah. Our grandma had these little old silver, little tiny knives. And I'm telling you, she would just sharpen that sucker.
Mm-hmm. It is thin now.
You miss that potato, it's going to cut your leg off.
When we had... both sides. On one side, you know, it was never got along. And then the other side was literally like the Partridge Family. Yeah. You go over there for
no
Christmas.
Arguments,
they're
nothing.
Bringing out the banjos and, oh, happy day. Yeah.
See, that's where I was raised too, in that type of environment. So to see a family not be able to get along for it, I just don't understand it, you know, because we were never like that.
Right. Well, we got lots of those stories, so we'll have to share more. But I have a really good shit far today.
Okay,
let's hear it. Okay, now if you're newer to the podcast and you haven't gone back through and listened to how we came up with the name shit far, I'm just going to remind you that our grandma used to say shit far all the time, and for the longest time, many, many years, I never knew what she was talking about.
Shit fire and save the matches.
So this is our shit far for today. July, that wasn't even June, and it wasn't the 21st. In July of 2021, I'm going to bring us to Augusta, Georgia.
Augusta.
It's going to be hot in July. Oh my gosh, I'm already like, I'm just feeling some humidity. Have you ever been in Georgia in July?
Oh. It's awful.
Don't go. So Trish Wilcher was in her bedroom, minding her own business, and suddenly she looked down. And she saw this little piece of fuzz moving on her bedroom floor.
Uh-oh.
So she started looking a little closer, like, why is there fuzz moving on the floor? Well, shit, far. She realized that little piece of fuzz was a tiny snake. I know.
A fuzzy snake?
A little tiny baby snake.
Oh.
Well, I would have had a panic attack, and that's where they would have found my body.
Yep.
Well, she starts to look around. Girl, she braver than me. I'd have left. House is gone.
There's more.
Can't be saved. So as she starts looking around, that's when she starts to notice it.
Uh-oh.
Shit far and save the matches. She finds several more baby snakes.
Infested.
So by this point in time, she is alarmed. And she yells for her husband. Hey, come here, look at this.
I'll be in the car.
I'll be in the car. We gotta burn the house down now. Yeah. We can't live here. It's infestation.
I already poured the gas. Just get in. We'll light the match.
Don't ask no questions. We got insurance.
Yeah.
Well, when her husband arrives, that's when they start looking under the bed. And to their horror, they discover 17 more. Baby snake.
That is one of my biggest fears, is a snake in my bed with me.
I'm just imagining they have one of those dust covers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? And they lift that thing up. I would never have a dust cover anymore. I remember thinking at one point in time, you don't have to have a dust cover. But if you think about it, the dust cover just hiding dust and snakes evidently underneath that bed. No, I'm not doing
Craters.
That. Well, in addition to all those baby snakes,
I bet she found a mama.
They also found mama underneath that bed. Now, these snakes were identified as gardener snakes.
I was going to say, they give birth to live.
Mm-hmm. And specialists said that because underneath the bed is a warm place.
Dark.
It's dark. It's secluded. And snakes love that. And so that's why underneath beds is the first place they will go if they come into your house.
That's probably why that one was in my bedroom.
Oh, I'm sure. And it also provides the perfect place for them to nest.
This has me weak.
Oh, I know.
Like literally my biggest fear.
Oh, I know.
Hey, that was last year that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I still, when I walk in my bedroom door, I still look at the floor to make sure there's
I'd
no
have
snakes.
The Roomba going in my room 24/7.
Yeah.
Security.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Security. Patrol. They see me patrolling.
Snake patrol.
Yeah. No, I like that. And I want to tell our listeners that on Unmasked today, you're going to get a little special treat because I created a little Scooby snack sized mystery that we are going to talk about. And
more baseball.
No. Because, I had enough sports. And I was like, I'm not going to talk about sports again because I don't know nothing about it. We have to refer to Kim, and that's no good. So I thought,
Always know everything. I was closer to the number of innings as you were, though.
But
I was a lot closer.
I was recently down this little rabbit hole. You know how it is.
Shocked.
And I was like, I'm just going to talk about that on Unmasked. Like, because I have spent 2 hours out of my life going down a rabbit hole for no reason.
Looking how Twizzlers and Fig Newtons are made.
Josh, we're looking up different things. But anyway, I'm going to talk about that on Unmasked. And then I'll also talk about the paramedics and all those things. So we got a lot of awesome stuff to talk about on Unmasked. So it's going to be a good episode.
I have to potty first.
Kim, you always have to go potty. Bless your heart. Well, come on over to Unmasked. You'll find the link in the description. It's on Patreon. All of our back catalog. We have a lot of Unmasked episodes. Oh, so if you have not joined us on Patreon yet, you are missing a lot of good content.
I think this is 91
videos.
Yeah. And I mean, we try to restrain ourselves a little bit on the air.
Oh, please.
But on Unmasked.
Not near as much as what we used to before they marked us explicit.
Right. After that point, we're just who cares? Apple. But anyway, come and join us on Unmasked. We're going to talk about all the things and we're going to have a good old time. And I think, when I was having a rough time this week, I just thought, I am so thankful for all of our Patreons because the chats that we have in there are so fun.
Oh, yeah. They just picked my birthday cake I'm going to be baking.
Oh, that's fun. Did they pick Kim's wig yet?
I haven't checked. I put it right before I left the house.
Kim and I were in the car coming back from Subway, and all of a sudden our watchers are like, beep, 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 beep.
Oh, good Lord.
So far, there was like three or four, and I think all of them picked a different one.
I put on, I do cooking videos on Patreon as well, and they chose a peach upside down cake. It was between that one or a sweet potato honey bun cake. And I'm going to be baking it for my birthday this year.
That's exciting.
Since it's peach and I'm gay, I'm going to do a bundt cake because it looks like a butthole. Yeah.
That's funny. Oh, before we go, I have to also share that Kim has to send a second pair of her panties out.
Oh.
Yeah, I believe the listener who bought them yesterday, I think it was Jennifer.
Got to take them off the website. It's mysteryinc.com.
We were only going to give away one pair of Kim's panties.
I mean, I'm going to have to continue to buy more if people keep buying my BVDs.
Hers are so raggedy. It's about time she bought some.
I mean, I need
some. She only has four pair, and we already sold one. Now we're going to sell two. So now she's down to two pairs.
Kim goes commando most of the time.
But we appreciate Jennifer. I hope I'm saying the right name, but I think it's Jennifer. Because I just saw the panty orders come through yesterday, and I just, it just gives me a good laugh.
Just please, God, don't tell us what you're doing with them.
Right. But it is nice because Kim signs them. So, I mean, you know, you just don't have a huge, big pair of BVDs hanging around.
Right. No.
You know, literally. It just gives you a good little laugh. Mm-hmm. If you're having a hard day, whip out the giant BVDs.
Right. Slap them on. Yeah. Get them in giggles.
You can always put them in a shadow box. Put my name right in the middle of the shadow box and display my BVDs.
Shadow box.
Shut up.
She's just trying to get people her box.
Shadow box. That's what she calls her vagina. I bet it is. Come play in the shadow box, baby. Mm,
yeah.
All right. Well, we will see you guys on Unmasked. And we're going to have a lot of fun.
Au revoir, les Felicias.
Well, bye.
Bye.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.